Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench and radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
M0HBR, KL7R. I'm here. I've got the binaural receiver working, and the hum you heard there was my 2 meters getting into it. But I got it working, and it does the phase thing. Over.
Excellent. Excellent. Congratulations. Is it a whole new whole new world of psychedelic CW there, Mike? Is it has it changed your ham radio life? Sometimes you read these articles about it, and they just present it in those terms. It must be very different. What's it like to listen to?
Well, it's not that big of a change. It's a big change, but it's not changing my whole life. It definitely has a three-dimensional feel. And a fuller sound like stereo, and you can see signals move from left ear to right ear. I've been using a Sound Blaster speakers in the room here, so it's not the same as if I had been using headphones. So I'm probably not getting the full effect, but I did put in an A/B switch and. It's interesting. Sometimes when it's mono, it's better, and sometimes when it's stereo, it's better. Sometimes when it's stereo, the noise kind of disappears or becomes not as important. It's not right. It seems to separate the noise and the signal for some reason. And then other times it seems stronger in mono. I don't know why. Maybe it's just the way the signal's coming in. It's a little bit hard to get a grip on for me. It's not like horizontal and vertical, which is apparently another way you can do binaural, horizontal and vertical polarization. It's in phase and 90 degrees out, so it seems to me like there's you can get in phase and 90 degrees out in every octave of audio. Maybe it's not octaves of audio that I'm dealing with. Maybe it's octaves of RF, but it seems to move from left to right more than once as you tune across it. Haven't really got the full feel of it yet. And the deal is that I've got a really wide DC receiver that I can hear signals. My kid can hear signals up around 26 kilohertz. I've been driving him nuts. I'll be listening to a broadcast station and the thing will be whistling so loud and so high in frequency in this hi-fi system that he just goes crazy. He was banging, no joke, he woke my wife up last night by banging his head against the wall. He said, would you please turn down that screaming M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R Juno, M0HBR London. Wow, it sounds lovely. When you say you tune through it and you hear it more than once, I wonder if that's just the effect of the DC receiver going through both sides of zero beat. That's the first thing that comes to mind. But, yeah, I've never tried that. That sounds interesting. Well, congratulations. Glad you got it going. Wonder, the next step, of course, will be to figure out a way to put both audio channels and a tuner on the internet, so you can share the stereo CW experience with hams in cyberspace. I guess you could do it with some of these remote base rigs, the W4MQ machine there in Washington. I use that quite often to listen to 75 meter sideband from London. But great. Yeah, I had kind of a good technical day yesterday also. We were talking about my the filter in my now 17-meter bare-bones W1FB Barbados Superhead receiver. This is a little rig, that little receiver that Doug DeMore designed, just around 1982, was in QST. Real bare-bones super heavy. He called it the Barbados receiver because he built one for a trip to Barbados. A single conversion super head with a 40673 dual gate MOSFET in the front end. And VXL controlled local oscillator. And the ladder filter. Originally, the first design was from using 3.579 megahertz color burst crystals. But the one I have was built by somebody else. And they put it together and they used a 5 megahertz IF. But anyway, I was asking you yesterday about lowering the capacitance to widen the filter. And I've gone through one round of that, and when I checked, the caps were already very, very low. Some of them were down at 10 picofarads. So I figured it wasn't sounding good. It just it sounded kind of pinched, kind of constricted. And I thought the problem was that I probably hadn't widened the the filter enough. So I decided to go ahead and test the bandwidth on the filter using the primitive test gear that we discussed yesterday. And so I had to figure out a way to do it, but I came up with a way and was able to get a rough measure of the bandwidth of the filter. And I can tell you how I did it, but the bottom line is I discovered the filter was about 2.9 kilohertz wide, which is sure plenty wide for SSD. And the problem with the audio was not there, but in the course of testing the thing, I saw that the audio amplifiers, the audio amplifier chip, was just getting overdriven when I tried to use the thing with a little speaker. And if I backed down on the audio gain, the audio got nice and clean again. So I think this thing is just destined for use with headphones. So that was my big technical adventure, Mike. Oh yeah, that and doing some online promotion for Solder Smoke. And that was interesting too. KL7R, M0HPR.
Oh, cool. Sounds like you need to get a set of powered Sound Blaster speakers and plug them in where the headphones go. Is it like an LM386 driver or what? Tell me how you did the Q thing. Is it like a scope and a SIGGEN and just sweep it or what did you do?
Well, of course, I'm glad you asked. It's all solder smoke addicts like to talk about, to describe their adventures, especially when they work out. All right. Here's the way I did it. First of all, I needed a signal, obviously, so I just turned on the spot or the net feature on the accompanying transmitter. And so this put out a very stable, crystal-controlled signal on, I guess, around 18115. And then I went over to the receiver on the test bench, hooked up a little lead, just a little clip lead to the antenna in, so it was getting enough RF to have a signal going through, all the way through. And I don't have a sweep generator or anything like that, but what I did is I just put the scope on the audio output. So I'm watching the audio output on the scope. And then I put the signal generator on the VXO. You got that? The signal generator is watching the frequency of the local oscillator. And I start out at zero beat, so there's no audio coming out. And then I tune to the appropriate side of zero beat, and right away I can hear in the headphones the audio, and I can see it on the scope. So I just keep, I actually got a little notebook next to the whole arrangement, and I'm keeping tabs on how the audio output level on the scope how that corresponds with the frequency of the local oscillator. And so as I move the local oscillator, it ended up, as I moved it to about 2.9 kilohertz, I could see the audio going from zero, then very low levels, very low frequency, all the way up to the high end of the audio range. So I came away concluding that the filter was, as I sort of expected it to be, around 2.9 kilohertz wide, which is fine. And I know also I noticed in it a couple of ripples. There's some ripple. If you look at, I guess if you came up with a good plot of the bandpass, the top part would not be flat. There'd be a couple of ripples in there, but certainly not enough to cause any real trouble, and sort of beyond my technical ability to go in there and fix it. I suppose it has to do with the impedances going in, impedance going out. But it was fun. It was kind of a neat little test, and gave me a sense of the bandwidth. I was able to do it without having to try to get my HeatKit SG6 signal generator involved, which would have been a real nightmare. So I wonder if you think that's a valid solder smoke method there, Mike. KL7RM 0HBR.
Oh, it works for me. I fiddled around with the filters on the ATS-3, which was, from what I could tell, had a 50 hertz bandwidth. It was just way too tight, and I fiddled around with taking out. It was a four crystal ladder filter, and I fiddled around with changing the shunt capacitance, removing the one of the crystals in the ladder filter. I tried all kinds of stuff. I tried shorting a crystal. I tried bypassing one of the shunt caps, and finally, when I got serious, I changed the shunt caps, and that seemed to work. And then right after I figured that out, a guy, I can't remember his call sign right now, published to QRPL a mod to the ATS-3, which got rid of all the ripple. There was huge ripple in the passband on that thing, even after on the ATS-3, even after I got a little lighter. It was horrible before it was wide, but he made a thing, and he changed the input impedance by making an L network to raise the to do an impedance match, and then that got rid of all the ripple. I don't know how in the world you'd ever determine the input impedance of your filter. Maybe put an SWR bridge or something. Into it. I don't know how he did that. I suppose you could take a noise bridge and determine whether it was lower or higher than 50 ohms, and whether it was inductive or capacitive. Maybe that's what he did, a noise bridge or one of those MFJ things. That's a tool I'd like to have, is one of those MFJ things. Yeah, the thing I've done is after reading the Elecraft list is I used my noise bridge noise source. And I just stuck it right on the antenna jack, and so that basically is every frequency that the receiver can hear at once. And then I, on the audio output, I stuck that into one of these audio spectrum analyzers like Spectran. I use Spectran, but I suppose you could use a PSK software and do the same thing, get it all at once. Yeah, the reason I asked is I was playing around with my scope when I was doing that a week or two ago when I did that SigGen grid dip meter thing. I put my scope across the parallel LC and you could see a peak. And I was wondering how you would, that's why I asked. I was wondering how you could use your scope to see a peak passband with some sort of SigGen. And I didn't know how you'd get it to cause a peak voltage. It's anyway, that's what I didn't understand there. Yeah, back to you. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, you know, the when you build in the ladder filters, the if you do it, if you want to do it properly, you've got to do all kinds of tests on the individual crystals and get their emotional inductance and all this other, all these other parameters I found very difficult to get, and I never built the test gear for it. It's all described in QRP Notebook and some of those other W1FP books. But I just didn't do it and just used whatever crystals I had and realized that the what I'd probably be ending up with is a little bit more ripple in the passband than a purist would like. But it doesn't really seem to bother things too much. But I was listening to the receiver now when I just, you know, it's a silly thing, when I put the headphones on and turn the audio gain down, it sounds really good. And 17 was open last night, a little bit, but I had a really weird experience with it because my call sign in the Azores was Charlie Uniform 2 Juliet Lima, CU2JL. And there aren't too many hams on Charlie Uniform 2. Charlie Uniform 2 is one particular island. It's the island of San Miguel, St. Michael's Island in the Azores. And there aren't too many hams there. And anyway, last night when I was tuning the receiver, I heard, the first station I heard was Charlie Uniform 2 Juliet. And I was so used to hearing Juliet Lima, I thought, my gosh, I'm going to hear my own call sign coming back. This is weird. One of these long delayed echo things. but it was Charlie Uniform 2 Juliet Uniform, which was pretty close. Enough to get my attention. I did a quick QRZ search on it. I know the guy. So I sent him an email. But he sounded good in the little receiver. I've got an old tiny box. It's the box is about 3 inches high by about 5 inches wide, about 6 inches deep. And just sits up on top of the 17-meter SSB transmitter built in the Heathkit DX40 box. So, yeah, that was kind of fun. I still got a few little bugs to work out in this thing. I don't know if I told you a story about this receiver, but my first Superhet was this bare-bones Superhet design that I just described, the Barbados receiver. And I built it, each circuit on an individual board. I was very careful with it. Oh, it was a great project. I wrote it up for, for QST. And, it was great fun. I mean, get my first real receiver going. It was for 20-meter CW. I used it a lot. Oh, great fun. And then in the course of building it and discussing it on the internet, there were a couple guys who came to me and said, hey, look, I have in the junk box, I have, one of these that I built and I never wanted it, or one that I never finished. And I bought both of them, $10 a piece or something, and they were sitting around the junk box. There was a Far Circuits kit board, I think it was Far, and so one of them was very nicely done, and the board was stuffed, and that's the one that I had. It was built, I think it was originally built for 40 meters, but I changed the oscillator, and that's the one I'm using now. But in the course of discussing getting this one going, years later, I think on Rec Radio Homebrew, we're talking about it, and a bunch of guys are helping me and giving me advice on how to set it up and everything. And one of them finally says, hey, I used to have one of those. This is after we've been discussing it for a couple of weeks. He said, I used to have one of those. He said, he starts describing some of the physical characteristics of the board. And I said, yeah, that's the one I'm working on. he had sold it to me while I was in Virginia in like the late 90s. And here I am, three countries later in London, working on it. And I run into the same guy on the internet, and he's talking me through some technical problems with it. So small world. Not too many home brewers out there, Mike. A KL7R Juno on the edge of the Mendenhall Glacier. This is M0HBR in downtown London.
All right, Bill. M0HBR KL7R Juno. So you must have a MapQuest or a Google Earth picture of my house there. That's great. Well, fine on the DX40. I don't even know what a DX40 looks like. I've heard about them. I've got a HW16. I'm thinking about giving away to my nephew who's real interested in ham radio. So thinking about fixing that up. Great. I think I can put this thing up on the net. Not very often because of bandwidth, but I think I can go to www.analogx.com, and he's got two really small little programs there. One's called a really simple. It's called the Simple Server Shout, which is a shoutcast server with no delay. Works better than shoutcast.com server. And he's also got a little simple web server, simple server HTTP, I think it is. And I'll put up a little micro web server, and I'll put this thing up on a shoutcast stream and see how it goes. I'll have to remember how to do shoutcast out of Winamp. It's been a long time. If I can't figure it out, I'll probably be able to do something like Microsoft NetMeeting. I'm not sure if NetMeeting will do stereo though. I'm pretty sure I can get Winamp to do stereo. Anyway, I'll see if I can get something figured out. Let's see, is there anything else? My kid just got back, so I'm probably going to watch a little TV. We've been watching Firefly, which is a really good science fiction series. He brought that home, and he brought the whole series. He's got four DVDs. Each of them have four issues in it. So we watched eight. We've got eight more to go. So we're going to do another few this evening. So won't probably stay too long today, Bill. I haven't got the last solder smoke up on the air yet. I was editing it when you called, so now I got another one to deal with. I pretty think I'll probably say 73 for tonight. There, M0HBR. Catch you next time. KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, okay, Mike. Oh, great. Well, I just wanted to tell you, I was feeling bad about not doing any of the processing and uploading on Solder Smoke, so I did some promotion yesterday, and it was part promotion for my website, which I just recently modified and updated. But I put kind of a notice that, you know, the website's been updated with a paragraph about Solder Smoke. And anyway, I put it up on Rec Radio Amateur Homebrew and Rec Radio Amateur Boat Anchors. And I also sent it to the GQRP Club mailing list. And I sent it to QRPL, but I think it's still awaiting moderator approval. Amazing that they have a moderator there. But it should go out on QRPL once they decide that it's not porn, I guess. The response is pretty amazing. I mean, within minutes of putting these messages out, I mean, the hit counter on my website was spinning a lot faster than it had before. And I think yesterday I had over 200 visitors yesterday. And, you know, that happens a lot. Anytime you put something out on the web like that, it'll get a lot of visitors. But I could see on my on the software that I use to track the visits to the website, I mean, literally all over the world, in Malaysia, United Arab Emirates, Paraguay, France, lots of UK, lots and lots of US hits, New Zealand, all over. Yeah, kind of fun. I don't know how many of them will go into the portion of the site that describes Solder Smoke, but I did put up a Solder Smoke page in the website. That's there too. One thing I was going to ask you, and I don't mean to hold you, because these movies, you got to go see the movies. But is there any way on the our media site, is there any way for us to tell whether people are are downloading, subscribing to Solder Smoke? Is there sort of a tracker feature there that you've that you know of? I took a look and couldn't find it, but sometimes these things are just sitting there staring at me, and I'm not hitting the right button. KL7RM 0HPR.
I didn't see one. I did see where a fellow signed himself up as our buddy, but I don't see a way to track it. Maybe there's a way on archive.org. Rmedia.org is basically the RSS feed, and it also is a place that uploads to archive.org, and the actual files at archive.org. Archive.org wants the file in a certain format, and Rmedia takes the MP3 and makes it into a certain format that that archive.org will accept and uploads it. So maybe there's a way on archive.org to track who's hitting the MP3. I didn't see it on Rmedia. I don't have the archive.org right now, but I sent that to you earlier, so you can take a look over there and see if there's something there that makes any sense to you, Bill. Or
okay, great. That's a good idea. I'll check it out. It'll be fun to watch that. And are you recording this one? Did you have the recorder on for this one, Mike?
Yes, I did. It was a good one.
Okay, good. Great. All right, listen, I'll let you go. Good talking to you. Say 7-3. Enjoy the film, and we'll have another episode here of Solder Smoke soon. I'll see if I can get into some technical trouble and come up with things to discuss. But congratulations on the final receiver. And, that's a good one. 7-3 Mike, KL7R, M0HBR.